Hello, everyone. So I'm back today, and I'm joined by Brian Froud.
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
That's right. Froud.
Look at that. See, the cloud thing helped, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm not at all like, you know, my brain's not going 1,000 miles an hour right now. We're good.
All good.
So now you played a character who I think everyone just loves on Detention Air. Right. You've also done, by the way, when I was going through your IMDb page, there's just so many things.
Yeah.
It's endless. And it's like everything that was made in Canada, you were a part of.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
It's rare. I was very fortunate to grab those shows and be a part of that, you know, the whole culture of animation here in Toronto. Like, and I feel totally privileged to be a part of that, like, world, you know, it's always what I wanted to do growing up. So.
Well, I mean, you know, your dream did come true, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Yeah. I'm a cartoon.
Because the people have given me questions, I do have to ask. I'm going to start off with those questions, and sure. I've kind of, you know, I'll work them in with some of my own questions.
Yeah.
So that's also the reason I'm looking at the paper a little more than I normally do.
Oh, go for it.
I just don't want to seem like I don't know what I'm doing. You know?
This unprofessional. I'm out of here.
Oh, it's fine.
So of all the characters you've done, and you obviously were in Total Drama Island and all the other versions, spinoffs of that show.
Yeah.
And you've also been, again, 1,000 other things. What's your favorite role?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, start off the hard ones.
Yeah. I don't like to pick my favorite babies, but I had so much fun doing Jimmy Two Shoes, and BZ was so close to who I am at home. You know, just like, oh, what am I going to do right now? Oh, I just have some pizza. Watch some TV. Yay! You know? And it just like, it was just felt natural for me to perform that character. And I got to work with Corey Doran, who's amazing. And the improv we would do back and forth would sometimes end up in the show and everything. And so that was a riot. So, I mean, BZ holds a special place in my heart, but they all do, you know, Lynch and Harold as well. And, you know, Sam. So it's, yeah.
A lot of good characters. The answer is really everyone, because you couldn't choose one, but you chose one kind of,
yeah.
But that's what most people do when I ask the question anyway, so it's okay.
The honor of my tattoo goes to Toon Marty, who, I don't know if my sleeve is a little janky here. Let's see. You can't really see if I, here. I'm disrobing for those who aren't watching the video.
Yeah, this is going to get clipped and go on social media. So
yeah,
okay.
There you go. Toon Marty was my first lead on a show, so that's why I got the tattoo.
Wow.
But I love Toon Marty as well, because I got to, you know, play around so much within the context of the show and everything. Got they let us play around and do improv a lot and everything, and a lot of that stuff ended up in the show too. So another one of my favorites.
There you go. Just you love them all.
And, yeah, totally.
You know, I think everyone loved watching you in every single role. So it kind of all worked out.
Well, that's friggin' sweet.
Now, I want to talk about Detention Air a little bit.
Yeah.
It is I did pitch this to you as like, you know, it's the 10th anniversary, and I lured you in like that.
For sure.
So, you know, what was the feeling when it ended? Because I think from my understanding, it was a little bit of a surprise. I think there was plans at least for, you know, more seasons. I think the rights kind of got all caught up and it became a mess. But what was your kind of initial reaction?
Well, I was confused because I had initially thought that, like, when I first started the show, I had no idea I was going to be in more than a few episodes. And then they sprung the whole, you know, spoiler alert.
There's no spoilers.
No, not
10
here,
years since it ended.
I had no idea that I was part of the twist of season one of being Red Circles. So I had thought I was just doing like the, you know, the certain guy who runs the servers, you know, in school and stuff. I thought it was very basic and just have a wacky character and stuff and, endearing himself to Lee. But, they sprung that on me, and I'm like, oh, that's cool, that's awesome twist. And then, but when it ended, to answer your question, I was really surprised, like, because they had left it on such a cliffhanger, and it was my understanding that they had intentionally planned to go further than
they did.
Like 6 or 8 seasons or something.
I think they were kind of, they wanted to leave it open. I don't, from my understanding from my conversation with Charles, it was not meant to be like they didn't have a set plan in mind. It was just more, we want to do something, we have some ideas, and let's just see what happens. And it never ended up getting
for sure.
Down.
Yeah. So ultimately, I was just confused. I was like, really? Oh, why? It was so good, you know.
So the interesting thing, and I actually talked to Charles about this when we were doing this, and you know, he kind of talked about how great the cast was. But we're talking about how sometimes with a show like this, right, that goes on, it went on at the time, especially for, you know, an animated show, it did go on for a while.
Yeah.
And there are situations where, you know, you become popular because of the show, right? And you, or you get another opportunity and you just, you can't, the scheduling doesn't work or whatever. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen with any, I think, any of the main characters of the show. Mm-hmm. And everyone stuck around the entire time.
Yeah.
And how, like, did you have opportunities? Did you turn things down to stay with the show? Did you feel like you needed to kind of see it through?
I would like to say that I did. to say, I'm in demand, people. Yeah, you better get me while I'm hot. I was in Toronto, you know, and that's where we recorded. That's where the show was produced and everything. And that's where the studio was and everything. So I had a lot of other opportunities around that time, but nothing conflicted, really.
Right.
Being a voice actor, you get to have more flexibility with your schedule in a lot of ways. It depends on your location, though, as well. Some people are, you know, can't always come in person to the studio. Depends where you are. And in Toronto, a lot of stuff gets done. So if you're here, you're good. You know, you could bounce across the city to other gigs.
So now there's this other question which I want to ask
you,
because I was talking to George Buza, who voices Beast on X-Men, right?
Mm-hmm, cool.
So I talked to him, and the interesting thing he told me was he talked about the experience of filming a show pre-COVID, right? Mm. And then post-COVID.
Right.
Right. I think we're allowed to say COVID on this, but I don't know. We're good? Okay, good. I'm getting a thumbs
bleep
up.
It.
I don't know. There's a whole bunch of weird rules. Like, you can't swear, apparently. That's a good reminder there. But yeah. Anyways, so you've done stuff post-COVID, obviously. Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of stuff pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Is there a material difference in the way that's recorded? You know, he spoke about not recording in studios and that kind of making it different.
Right. I did, actually, it's funny, it's not animation related, but I did right around the time of, like about a year after COVID had hit, I did my first legit commercial at home. I did a Subaru or something like that. It was like a commercial for a vehicle company. And they sent me the whole kit. Like, they sent me the recording device and like the MIDI system and all that, and sent it to my house to set me up and everything like that. I have a booth of my own, but they just wanted their own system. And then they had the Zoom set up and everything like that. So post COVID, that was kind of like how you would do things sometimes. Beyond that, if you were booked to go in person, you would, you know, got to do the mask thing, and then the whole sanitizing your hands, and then the distance and everything. But in a recording studio, there's not a lot of, you're kind of already isolated in the booth, and then they're on the other side of the glass. So there isn't a lot of danger for, you know, infection or anything.
Right.
So
now, again, it's very interesting with when you're talking about a voice cast, right? Because again, there is so much mobility, and even when the show is recorded, I imagine there's still mobility about people kind of coming in and out.
Yeah.
How much then did you kind of get a bond with the cast on a personal level, right? Because that is important, even when you're just voice, like even though it's just voice. Yeah,
totally. You know, honestly, Khalil, that's one of the things that I miss the most, because nowadays we self-tape at home for our auditions, and we don't get a lot of callbacks to go into the studio in person. They, I think, realized over the period of time that, hey, we actually don't have to rent out the studio space to hold these auditions. These actors can do it from home and edit it themselves and send it in that way. And it's like, yeah, we kind of all had to adjust that way. So I do miss that. But in terms of meeting the other actors and getting to know them on a personal level and hanging out with them and stuff, a lot of that happened before we recorded, because we would be in auditions all the time together, in waiting rooms, just hanging out and talking and meeting one another and just getting to know one another and maybe going for coffee or a lunch or whatever. And so you kind of already built up a relationship with them. So I had known some of those actors, like Sean and Kristen Fairley and a few of the others in that show already. So we don't generally record together, usually in any shows. There's been occasions where I have, like Jimmy Two Shoes. But right. for Detention Air, I was always in by myself. I don't think I ever went in with anyone else. But I did know them beforehand, like a lot of the cast.
Anyway. Right. So, yeah. Would you go out then after? Or, like, you know, would you still, like, would you guys hang out, like,
yeah,
friends?
Sometimes, yeah. Okay. Especially on Jimmy Two Shoes. But in Detention Air, yeah, I think I did meet up with some of the cast afterwards sometimes. But it didn't happen that often because often we're in the situation, you're kind of just there. You have your time, say it's 2:15 to 3:45 or whatever it is. You got your time, you go in, and then they're on at 3:45. So it's not like when you're done, you can just, hey, you want to come to lunch? Yeah, in an hour. So yeah. Sometimes it worked out, but yeah.
So talking about kind of the reveal, right? And the biggest reveal, I think, probably the biggest reveal of the show,
sure.
which was Rad Circles, obviously, being you.
Yeah.
And so you found out, and you kind of said kind of before as part of the answer to the other question that you didn't know.
Yeah.
No now, idea. What was your reaction to that?
I was like, wow. Oh my gosh. Well, me? It's me? So that's kind of what I did. Yeah.
Someone actually asked if you could do the voiceless, so that's good.
Oh, there you go, Padre. Hi, everyone. Hi, Reddit, subreddit, whatever.
Detention Air Reddit, yeah. Subreddit, yeah.
Hi! But yeah, you're the splattiest. Yeah, that's totally my reaction, was just shock and like, you're kidding me. Like, and here's the beautiful thing about the show is they planted these little seeds along the right. way. And it's so brilliant. And looking back on the show, I can recognize it. And back then, I was just blindsided by it.
So I think it's interesting because, and I don't know if you know this, but at the time, you know, this was an era before social media was like the yeah. thing that every kid was on, right? Mm-hmm. And Teletoon had a poll about who they thought Rad Circles was.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who did they think it was?
I don't remember off the top of my head who it was, yeah. But it was not you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it was Barrage. I think
that Barrage, okay.
Barrage got the most votes, yeah.
Cool.
So
we fooled them.
What was your kind of like... Like, how were you hoping people were going to react to it? And did the reaction kind of meet what you expected?
Yeah. I mean, like when I had found out, like, obviously, you know, I literally found out probably a few days before I had to record it. So we don't get the script like the entire season ahead or anything. Right. We get one script at a time, maybe 3 or 4 days before you actually go into record, because they're always doing updates and different drafts and stuff like that.
Right.
Sometimes even in the studio while you're recording it. So yeah, the twist like totally threw me for a loop. And then when I got there, I was just like, this is nuts. Is this what's happening? You know, like, and so my reaction was just basically like, I was super impressed because I had no idea. And having recorded all the episodes prior and reading them and going through them, I didn't see that coming. Like,
right.
I was just as surprised. Like, I didn't know who to expect about that.
Did you have your guesses? Outside.
Well, I thought it had something to do with like the principal.
Yeah.
I thought there was something going on, but I didn't know what it was. I felt the conspiracy vibe happening.
Right.
And I was like, what is going on? I was just as like, like I was confused too. I was kind of following along and trying to put the pieces together
right.
without being too like, hey, what's happening? You know, what's coming up next? What's season two about? You know, I didn't want to like pry or anything, but it was really interesting to be a part of it and follow along as we went, you know?
So I'm assuming you weren't disappointed by the fact that you were rather circles though, no?
I was like, that's cool, because I love playing like villain characters, you know, that's always fun. Or just like a dual, you know, dual personality kind of thing and stuff. So it was fun.
So it's interesting because, you know, one of the biggest things for your character is yeah. riddles.
Yeah.
And the only image, especially because of the way the character is animated, right? The only image I get in my head is like some version of like the Riddler from yeah, Batman, right?
Totally, yeah.
Was that kind of what you were kind of thinking of when you were trying to, you know, after you kind of knew the situation with the character, how you tried to model it or?
Yeah, I tried to, it might have been a sort of a subconscious thing with the Riddler, but I was trying to make his laugh a little more sort of sinister. Whereas, you know, previously it was all just sucking up to Lee and just, you're the greatest, you know, that kind of thing, you know. But then the laugh started to get a little more psychotic.
Yeah.
And so I sort of leaned into that as the series went on, and my laughs just got more and more nuts. And I think that that kind of lent itself to that Riddler thing that you're talking about, like laughing at his own riddles.
So I'm assuming then that you didn't record the Rad Circle's voice for the beginning.
No, not the very beginning. No, it was all just sprung on me in the moment.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So would you, if, and again, you know, legally, I don't even know if it's possible.
Right.
If they were to ask you to return for another season, would you do it?
Well, I don't. Yes, 100%. Yes. Absolutely. I would love to do a movie. I think they should do a Detention Air movie to tie up all the loose ends. You know?
Once we figure out who has the rights, then we can really start lobbying them. Just don't know yet. So,
yeah, I don't know who holds them right now. I mean, it was Novana for a while. I think maybe they sold them to Cartoon Network. I don't know.
Yeah, Course's has the rights. So,
yeah,
we're trying to get someone from Course on. I'm just saying, you know,
that'd be good. Yeah.
We're just going to grill them about whether or not they can do a Detention Air movie.
Totally. That'd be awesome.
So now, after the reveal, how much input did you get on, you know, Lynch's kind of character?
None of the, like, all the writing was in place already. All of the character development was there. Like, they had this arc, you know, all in there, you know, set in stone, basically. And anything I did in the booth that I improvised or anything, sometimes little things got in. I can't remember specific moments or specific, you know, lines that I had maybe come up with, but I know that the atmosphere was, you know, forgiving in that sense. Like, if you wanted to stray away from the script a little bit, you could, but you definitely had to hit those marks and hit the moments that were, you know, imperative to the narrative. You know, what am I, Eminem now?
Imperative to the narrative.
But yeah, so there are moments you definitely have to, you know, when you're voice acting in general in any sort of given show, you have to hit, you know, what the writer's intentions are. You got to get all those words out. And then they say, okay, now do whatever.
Right.
So for Lynch, I think there were a few little bit of, you know, creative license moments.
So even though you didn't know who he was, did you know he was not a student? Was that something you knew in advance or not?
No, not at all.
Really?
Yeah, I thought he was just another student. Like, he was the one running the servers and everything like that. But then all of a sudden finding out that he's the owner of the company and everything like that just blew my mind. I was like, what is going on? Yeah, so it was really confusing. And then that my age was actually a lot older and all that. Yeah.
So that was never something which you kind of incorporated into the voice. That was just...
No, but you know what? Initially, when they requested, they asked for auditions from actors, my breakdown, it's called, they sent, we're looking for sort of a voice that's like Jimmy Stewart. And Jimmy Stewart is like the old, like, vintage Hollywood actor, right? So he talked like this, right? Jimmy Stewart was a little slower and older, right? That's kind of Jimmy Stewart's voice. But I aged him up a little bit, made him a little younger than Jimmy Stewart, and it sort of came out like this. And then I got a little cleaner with my voice, and I didn't have as much gravel. And then all of a sudden it was Lynch, right?
Yeah.
So they initially said Jimmy Stewart, which is kind of a little clue in and of itself, is that, yeah, he's actually older than a teen, right? And it's like, oh, I didn't even get that. Looking back, I kind of feel kind of dumb about it.
So when you found out, did you then kind of slow the voice down a little bit?
I got a little more methodical with it. Yeah, I got a little more intentional behind the things I was saying, and rather than just a surface level, I'm a wacky, you know,
right,
nerdy character. I was sort of like that. I had more to work with. I had more context, more subtext, and
right.
As well,
so I think that kind of actually worked for the show because you kind of had to adjust your character, right?
Mm-hmm.
While everyone else was kind of realizing what was happening, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's interesting, actually.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
It could have backfired, but you were able to pull it off. So
yeah, well, thank you. Hopefully it shows in the show.
So when you are kind of creating this voice, right?
Yeah.
And when you're creating a voice for any of your characters, how much, because I feel like it's a hard thing to say, well, I want you to sound like this, right? I'm sure you hear a lot of that, though. I want you to sound like this.
Yeah.
How much, like, how does that process work? Do they just give you someone and say, like, you know, I want you to sound like this person, or do you kind of get to play around with it and kind of go back to them with a few different options?
Sometimes they'll literally tell you, hey, we need Will Ferrell meets, you know, Paul Rudd or something, like whatever. They'll tell you the voices they have in their head of what they think the character might sound like. Fred Flintstone or whatever. It's sort of that vibe. And then so what your job is to try not to just copy what Fred right. Flintstone sounds like, but to sort of be inspired by, okay, that's the world. They're kind of looking for a character similar to that. So what I do sometimes is I try to mash, you know, characters together, you know, Fred Flintstone meets Jimmy Stewart or whoever it is, right. like, and I'll try to blend those together and make one voice out of that. And some of my voices are just bad impressions because for Beezy, they gave me that character right in the audition. I didn't know I was going out for it. And they showed me the picture and I was like, oh, okay. And they gave me like 5 minutes. Okay, go and see what you can come up with this. And I was like, all right. And I looked at it and he was a bigger, heavy set character. So I thought, okay, well, he's got a deep voice, right? And I was thinking of pop culture and who's got a deep voice. And I was like, okay, well, how about Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond? And he kind of talks like this. And then sort of from there, I just made him a little younger and made him bouncier. I put him on a trampoline all the time. Boing, boing, you know, like, and that's kind of how I got right. that vibe. And so that's sort of my formula. I just kind of like, you know, pick and choose.
You start from somewhere, you kind of work down, and you kind of add characteristics of the character.
Yeah, that's right. And not all of them are just mixes of well-known people or impressions or anything like right. that. Sometimes they just come out of me and I'm just like, wow, what? Like some of them I forget I even could do. It's like, where did that come from? I don't even remember doing that. And so it's really interesting. It's an interesting line of work. Yeah.
So I want to ask you a question. This might sure. be controversial. I don't know. Who knows? We'll find out in a second.
Okay.
You know, feel free to like leave if you feel like I'm getting too controversial here.
I've had enough.
But I think there's been this conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with movies, right? And you look at, I'm thinking like the recent Super Mario Bros. Movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you had, it's an animated movie and you had a bunch of people who are very well-known actors.
Yes.
And I have a very strong opinion that this is a very bad way to do business when you're talking about animated movies, because right. I think, you know, when you have someone like Chris Pratt, who I have my own problems with, you know, when you have someone like Chris Pratt, you know, being Mario, it doesn't really work. They kind of made it work with the movie, but still it doesn't really work, right?
Yeah.
What value do you think studios are missing when it comes to voice actors? Because there is a talent that regular character actors, right, or regular, mm-hmm. you know, actors don't have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Chris Pratt's a good example. I mean, like you can't put a person like that in that kind of role, in my opinion, because does he have, I don't know. Is he Italian?
No, I don't think so.
That's to me right there. That's a problem because yeah. He hasn't lived the experience. And, you know, Mario, whether it's a cartoon or not, like that's a real person in my opinion. Like Mario's real to me.
Right.
So if you want to get authentic and genuine as possible, you have to have some of that experience, you know? The only thing I go outside of that with is like when I do, like if I do a British accent, I'm part British. I also have Irish roots. So I feel like I'm okay in that area. With a little bit of Scottish, I think that's okay.
Right.
But when you start to get into ethnicities and stuff, I don't think that that's, you know, yeah, I got a problem with that too.
So, because I think my thing with Chris Pratt and it's not just him. I don't want to single someone out, but like, you know, there are certain people who it's like whenever they're actually in a movie, you're just like, well, that's just Chris Pratt, you know, doing this, right? Just yeah. Chris Pratt with dinosaurs. It's Chris Pratt, you know, as an action here, whatever, right? Like you just see the same, like as it is, they kind of have their role, right? So when you try to do something like that, I think it's very different than when you look at voice actors who are frankly significantly more talented in that area of acting, mm-hmm. right? Than a lot of these people who, you know, kind of develop these characters and kind of become well known, obviously, because of them.
Yeah.
And I think, do you think there is that star power trade off? Because, you know, people know who Chris Pratt is, right? You know, as much as, you know, you may want to say, well, you know,
yeah,
he's not really the best person for the role. There is the level yeah. of, like, Chris Pratt's going to get people to go watch a movie.
Right. I would have hired Bobby Cannavale or someone like someone who's Italian. But it's funny because, like, he is a movie star at this point. Right. Like, he started on Parks and Rec, which, well, I'm sure he started before that. He was in a few things, but, like,
that was his big break.
Yeah, it was his big break. Right. And yeah, super lovable character, very funny, like great improvs, stuff like that. But, you know, and then became a monster of a celebrity and a movie star. And like all of a sudden it's like, boom, this huge, you know, and then like, that's the thing, like when you're casting, like, unfortunately, part of the business, this is Hollywood though. Like Canada's right. a little different, I guess, because we don't really have major celebrities, but someone like that, it's the name, it's the box office draw, right? Like some people are literally going to go because it's Chris Pratt. They're not going to go for Bobby Cannavale or somebody, you know, who doesn't have as big of a name. So it's box office receipts, right? And unfortunately, that's the business side of show business, right? And yeah, it's too bad that it has to be like that. But like, I don't know. It only started happening sort of shortly after Robin Williams, you know, like,
yeah,
Robin's obviously a, you know, superior legend. Being. Yeah. It's like incredible. So, you know, but beyond that, like they started to just put names in things. And for me, that doesn't always work. It did with Over the Hedge though. I love that movie and I love, you know, I just think that that's just great casting. But, you know, when you have things where it's just like a name for namesake, you know, like you said it, like Chris Pratt, like for that movie, I don't think, you know, is quite right.
Yeah. So again, and I don't want to make, but I think, and I guess part of that is also, and I've heard shows be canceled because the pitch was not strong enough because there was no star attached to it.
Right.
Right? Yeah. I think some of that is, I know there was something that came out a while ago about Universal not wanting to do a movie like Mario without the character, like without sure. the stars. So
yeah.
I think that is something which is concerning, but I was just wondering if you had the same opinion on that, or if you kind of had a different perspective on it, but it looks like I think we're kind of aligned on this.
Yeah, same boat. I mean, like, he's a talented individual for certain things, yeah. you know.
You got to know your role and you got to be able to kind of.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, he's great in a lot of other things. I just don't think that was quite right. But, you know, I'm not, you know, going to judge or anything like that. Like, right. I don't know. I didn't even see it. So, but like, for all I know, it's amazing. But, I just like, yeah, I would rather see that opportunity go to somebody who, you know, is Italian. Like that, right. like it just makes sense in my brain. You know, can Brian Froud do an Italian accent? Sure. Like I can, you know, I my entire childhood was just being a parrot, mimicking things and monkey see, monkey do. That's all right. I did as a kid. So yeah, I can, but should I? I don't think so. I don't have an Italian family. I don't know what that's like. I can't bring more depth to that character, you know, but if I was Italian, I could probably bring so much life and depth and it would probably be amazing.
Right.
Because it would feel real. And that's kind of like, that's where my priority is. I would rather see a real portrayal rather than a surface level thing.
Right.
And plus he probably knows a lot of people because of the Lego movie in the animation industry and like, just get Chris Pratt, you know? Like,
yeah.
So, and yeah, business decision, but
yeah,
maybe not the right one.
I mean, it made a lot of money. So maybe they think, yeah, they think it's the right one.
It was right for the business side of things. Yes. For art, debatable.
So I guess kind of to build on that, does that happen to you when you go into an audition and you just feel like, there are these people who are there just because of their name and it's not because of necessarily how talented they are or how good they are at this specific thing? Because again, voice acting is a very hard thing. I don't think people will realize it's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah, we have to be wordsmiths. We have to understand scripts in a way that, you know, every single word matters, every articulation matters, tone matters, emotion is huge. Like, and that's not always easy just to portray.
Right.
I can't just make you cry all of a sudden unless I really work hard at that. And so it is a job. I think that here it's a little different. I don't think like bigger names aren't really a thing in Canada. I mean, like there's a few Canadian celebrities that are still here that work within this industry here. but a lot of them just kind of split and go to the States because they're like, ah, my talents are wasted here. I've got to go.
Yeah, which and is a whole other thing.
It's
which
a
is,
whole
you know,
other
yeah.
thing, yeah. But yeah, sometimes I think I'm sure there are, you know, performers that get hired before other performers because they just have a built-in kind of relationship with
right.
casting directors, producers, writers, animation studios, things like that. So
interesting.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting question. Or yeah, interesting answer, sorry, to the question. I'm not going to myself.
Interesting question, too.
Yeah. There, thank you. Yeah. I realized as I was saying that, I was like, oops, can't give myself credit there. I gotta give
you. Sure you can. Yeah.
So I guess the other thing is when you look back on how it started, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I mean, I don't know. Did you wake up wanting to be a voice actor or did you want to do something in, you know, something acting related? And how'd you find this?
Well, like when I was a kid, it was, you know, I was always playing dress up and stuff and being silly and everything like that, trying to get attention, you know,
right.
Just trying to get a laugh or two, because that always felt good, right? Laughing. And for me, one of the first kind of like aha moments was seeing Monty Python, which is a British sketch comedy group, right? And they're my heroes. And like when I was a kid, because they did so many different characters
right. And
so many different voices, and they just seemed to have so much fun and they lost themselves in their characters. They're such rich performances and just fantastical worlds they would create, even just sketches, and just hilarious and funny timing and stuff. And for me, that's like the gold standard. And then from there, I never really thought about animation. I was a big fan though, growing up, because of Transformers, G.I. Right. Joe. Like I love Starscream. I was like, that was one of the first performances. I was like, wait a minute, Starscream is Cobra Commander. It's the same, it's the same voice. And then, so I kind of knew a little bit, like I stayed and watched the credits, even at a very young age, I knew Frank Welker and stuff. And so from there, I never really thought twice, because I didn't really think that was a job I could do here in Canada, or I was in small town Ontario. And so, but as time went on and I went to high school and then got into theater and stuff because I love to play and all that. And I was led down the right path by one of my teachers and, you know, saw a few performances of me and was like, you should probably do this. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, I was like, this, you should perform and everything. And then sort of set me on the right path, showed me some great movies and everything. And at this time, The Simpsons was just starting.
Oh.
So when, like, I had watched Tracy Ullman's show when I was a kid, like a lot younger, and when that first started, and I saw The Simpsons on there, but this was right around the period in high school when they started to, like, get their own series, and then, boom, explosion of that stuff. And those voices, along with Kids in the Hall, which were also a comedy troupe here from Canada, Toronto, and reminded me a lot of Monty Python as well. But between those two and all the characters I had, it was like this, you know, like I said, golden era of like all this great character work and wonderful voices and performances that I was just like spoiled. And so I was just mimicking all this stuff left and right. Oh, Chicken Lady from, you know, which is almost funny enough now that I do that. It sounds like Lynch. But Mark McKinney from Kids in the Hall does Chicken Lady. Oh, do you want a beer? Or do you just want to drink out of the toilet? You know, like it's kind of like the amazing voices and stuff like that. And then obviously Simpsons, you know. Oh, geez, Marge. Oh, boy, I can't wait. But yeah, stuff like that, I was just like absorbed like a sponge and I was like, these are great. And then from there, I got into children's theater because you could do a lot of characters there and stuff. I'm kind of running off. Let me know. You just stop me anytime.
Oh, no, this is interesting. So I'm going to have no issues. Yeah.
But yeah, from there, it was just like children's theater. And then I got an agent just doing like sort of comedy shows and I worked at Second City, which is great for improv and stuff like that and here in Toronto. So, and yeah, from there, little commercials, little one-offs and little parts and things. And then before I knew it, like total drama and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I think the interesting thing is obviously you have like, I'm not, you know, no one's going to sugarcoat here. You have a very special talent when it comes to your ability mimic voices. I mean, as someone who can do absolutely no accent in it or any voice of any sort, you know, I think that like that is a talent, and I think it is something which I believe is underappreciated. But how did it, like, was it something you had to nurture, or was it something, like you said, because you said you were talking about like you just pick up voices, was that something you had to kind of practice toward, or were you able to just kind of do it, you know, intuitively?
Initially, here's the thing, like, intuitively, I think is a good way to put it, because like I was like, guess, blessed with a good ear, right? Like I could, like, I love music too. And when I hear things, I can hear tones of things and I can match them. Right. Like, right. And so
like a parrot.
Yeah. Like a parrot. Yeah. Exactly. And so that side of things, helped me. I think that part of the talent is, you know, something that maybe I was born with, or maybe I developed at a young age because it's kind of like rehearsal. I kept repeating the things, the funny commercial I saw on TV, or the G.I. Joe show. And I was like just watching and like repeating things in the Transformers movie. I love that too, where, you know, there's different voices and stuff, Ironhide, you know, but Prime, you know, things like that. And I would just repeat things. But yeah, over and over. So I guess it's like that whole thing of repetition is the key to success or whatever. So I just like kept going at it and at it. But what really matters is when you get to a point where you're like, oh, it's not just to sound like it. Right. You also have to embody the characters. Right. You have to be those. You have to be in the moment. If that character's experiencing sadness or fear or anger or something like that, you have to do that yourself. Not as a method actor, but like you have to at least.
You can't just be parroting lines. You have to be able to change the voice for the character, right?
Totally, totally. You have to access that vulnerable side of you that you can allow yourself to play, allow yourself to feel those emotions and express yourself in that way. And the more legit you are, the more like genuine you come across, the more an audience is going to appreciate a character and how three-dimensional and real the character seems. So it's great for storytelling.
So I guess to kind of build off that, if you had, like, if someone, you know, listening wanted to kind of enter the industry, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe they feel like they can parrot voice, or maybe they can't. Mm-hmm. What would you say, what advice, and I know advice is kind of a weird word, but like, what would you tell them?
Well, I would say just keep at it, but also, like, you know, find an audience. The best way to gauge how well you're doing for growth and, you know, evolving your abilities is to get in front of a live audience. And if they respond, how are they responding? Whether that's drama and trying to make someone cry because of a, you know, dramatic, you know, tragic story or something, or if it's to make them laugh, like in a stand-up comedy situation or improv troupe. So if you get in front of an audience, then you can kind of gauge a little more of where you're at, because we always need that outside perspective. Even when you're just starting out, especially when you're just starting out, because then you get the raw kind of critiques, right? It's right. Like, oh, if you bomb, then that's good, because then you learn that, okay, don't do that again, and try to figure it out, right? It's like trying to figure out a puzzle. And then when you're on stage, you're usually not alone in most situations for plays and improv and stuff. So you also meet great people who can also give you, you know, right. Their perception of you and stuff and advice, or, you know, lead you down certain paths and make you realize things you maybe haven't thought of.
Right.
So that's always invaluable, the relationships we make along the way. So, yeah.
Well, with that being said, I mean, do you have anything else you want to share? Are you working on anything now? What are you up to now?
I just want to say that I appreciate the Detention Era Reddit, you know, like I feel flattered to be a here now doing this for y'all. So I appreciate you, and thank you for watching the show and being fans, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, thank you for coming and taking the time to come into studio. And I know it was probably, you know, it's downtown Toronto, it's never fun to get around.
Hey, I like it. It's a nice day out.
You know? Yeah, that's good. It's better than, you know, being snowing and negative 40 degrees. Right. Totally. So it's nice.
Yeah.
Are you a movie fan outside of, like,
100%, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah. Movie fan, yeah.
Sure. So what movies have you watched recently?
Recently, I watched one actually called Snack Shack. It's pretty funny. Yeah, it's about these two kids in 1991 who end up renting a snack shack by a poolside,
right?
And just to be a part of kind of the culture and the around the pool and everything. And to there's like the girl next door and all that, and the first crush and stuff like that. These are young kids, but it's so much fun and hilarious. And it's got a Canadian actor in it, who was in The Fablemans. I forget his name right now, but, he was great. And, yeah, it's great actors, great characters. But I just watched The Omen, the prequel. That was pretty freaky, pretty creepy stuff. I can go on and on about movies. What have you seen lately?
I mean, exams and so I have not watched that much recently. I can't even think of the last movie I watched, if I'm being honest with you. I actually don't know. That's not Ghostbusters would probably be the last one.
Oh, the Frozen Empire one? Yeah. Or, oh, cool. Was it good?
It was Ghostbusters fun.
there you go. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I was not expecting a masterpiece, so you know, that's what I got, right? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen what were your favorite what's your favorite movie all time?
All time, it's a British movie called With Nell and I. And it it's this just about these two down and out actors in 1969, I think. And they just end up like deciding to ditch the whole idea of being actors. Like they need a getaway. So they go to this one of their uncle's cottages, and it's just like they don't know what to do because they're out of their element. They don't know how to start a fire or cook a chicken or anything like that. They don't know how to eat. They just ended up there and they without thinking it through. And so it's just mayhem and mishaps in this cottage location, but it's just so well written and well performed, and it's just hilarious. But that's probably my favorite of all time. But then I put like Ferris Bueller up there,
of course,
Ghostbusters, Young Frankenstein, Clue, Roger Rabbit. Like I put,
put Clue up there. And
Clue, I love Clue. Yeah,
that's a controversial one, I think.
Yeah, I love that. It's so fun. You know why I like it so much? Because there's so no one's a star in it. It's all an ensemble of these great characters, and movies like that I love. I like the Wes Anderson movies are great for that too.
Have you seen Knives Out?
Oh yeah, yeah, okay. same
yeah,
deal.
Same thing, yeah.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, I could do this probably for like another 3 hours talking about movies.
That's great, yeah.
However, I know you have to go, and I know that we're going to probably get kicked out at some point, so I mean,
No worries.
I don't want to do that, so thank you again.
Yeah.
We'll have to have, I mean, look, you know, I will have to have you back on at some point to talk about movies, so.
Great, that sounds awesome.
Kind of more broadly, so, you know, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you everyone for listening, and I'll see you all next time.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.